This is Barry from Watford, and you are listening to Joe at the Fringe. Thank you.
Welcome to episode 3 of Joe at the Edinburgh Festival, Joe at the Fringe. I'm Simon Clancy, along with Noz Chowdhury. Morning.
Hiya.
How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. You?
Yeah, good. Good day yesterday for all of us, I think. We reconvened. We sort of separate early afternoon or sometimes late morning and then reconvene sort of close to sort of midnight for a bit of food and a sort of a catch-up. And we're in and out of shows all day. And I think we both had a pretty good day yesterday, didn't we?
Yeah, no, I had a really good day. And you were saying that you had a load of bangers as well.
Yeah. Yep, my firework collection grows and grows. Yeah, it was a really good day, actually. So I saw back-to-back-to-back-to-back really good shows, which we'll get into in a bit. Coming up on today's pod, we will discuss those shows. We will have a little game of rom-com or nom, given that you went to see Brennan Rees's show. So actually, we have something to discuss in common in that now we've both seen the same show, so we can existentially discuss the whys and wherefores. And we will hear from Will Hall, a rookie comedian, as it were. He's only been going sort of 18 months. So we'll hear a little bit from him and the pressures of being a first-timer here at the Edinburgh Festival. It is a beautiful day here in Morningside. It's been a lovely day. I've realised I've never been to Edinburgh when the Fringe isn't on. I wonder if it's as beautiful as this the entire time.
One thing we both noticed last night is it's the first time when we were walking along, we kind of realised that we're actually in a city that's not just a festival, because there was like locals out and about and sort of getting pissed and stuff. And yeah, it was quite strange to sort of see like, oh fuck, we're in Edinburgh, like just a normal city.
It's almost like we opened a door, sort of like Mr. Ben really opened that door, and all of a sudden there was this completely different world of, you know, because I don't think it's a lie to say that the Fringe is very white, very middle class. It's kind of full of falafel eating hummus lovers, Guardian readers, lefties, much like you and I.
Well, I mean, I am of colour, and
apart from that,
yeah, I'm a working class hero.
Apart from that as well,
and I'm a carnivore.
That too.
But yeah, apart from that, you're spot on.
So I want to start with Brennan Rees, because he was a guy that I made a massive fuss about, said I thought he could run away with the Perrier Award or whatever incarnation it is these days. You went to see him yesterday on my recommendation, cancelled something else. So was I right? Was I wrong? Comedy is obviously subjective. How did you feel it was?
Yeah, I thought it was ace, and I thought you were bang on.
Sorry, can you just repeat that, the bit about me being bang on?
You were right for once in your life, Sam.
No, no. Cut that out. Cut that out, everybody. Cut it.
But yeah, no, it was everything about it. It was the venue, like the atmosphere.
Comfier seats at the Fringe,
yeah,
by the way.
Delightful seats.
And that is important.
Yeah, it was basically being on a settee, and just the way the sort of room was sort of set out. And there was also like fairy lights and accompanying music.
There's a pianist in it, yeah.
That's the kind of first time that I've kind of had that, where it's like a stand-up show, but like it's got that element to it. Like usually you'd get that like in a play or something, but this was definitely not a play. It was like a comedy show, but like it was really, really good. He's got a way of being both sincere and then cracking jokes over it. That's really, really impressive. It's like, I mean, a part of the premise is obviously like he tells his story through his love of rom-coms, and he borrows elements of that, including the music. I mean, that's part of it. But I think it was you who sort of said it would be so easy for it to sort of come across as twee.
That was me.
You're right. You've been right twice. So that should be noted.
What a day!
But the reason why it's not twee is like it's still a comedy show. So he's like cracking sort of gags throughout, and like it can't be twee if he's talking about humping furniture and stuff like that. And it also helps, like it almost seems like it's a little bit of an insult when you say like a comedian sort of likable or sort of nice, just because that seems to be sort of damning them with faint praise, because like you're not talking about the comedy. But he is very funny and very talented, but he's also extremely likable, And that's important because, like, you totally go on this journey with him. And yeah, and I don't think either of us want to sort of spoil it in any way, but it sort of, most sort of stand-up shows, they tend to end on like a big end gag, and it's sort of like that's the end, and like everyone goes off laughing and having enjoyed it. But that's not the case here, is it?
No, I wrote the review for joe.co.uk, in which you can find all of the reviews. Well, not reviews, we're not really doing reviews, just things that we think you'd like to see either when you're up here, if you come up here, or when they inevitably tour these shows around the country, and you know, you can go and see them at your local comedy venues. And I wrote very much that you're expecting this final gag that never comes, because that's kind of not the point of the show, really, and how it plays out towards the end. I wanted to ask you about, what's your favourite rom-com?
That's a tough one. I do like The Notebook.
I knew you were going to say The Notebook.
I mean, generally, I fucking love rom-coms. I do, like, it's like one of my favourite things. But I
literally would never have you down as a rom-com lover.
Really?
Truly.
No, honestly, I've always loved them. And also, as previously disclosed, I am of colour. And
is this kind of your reaction to the Me Too movement? You're just like, I've got to keep telling people I'm brown. I'm white, listeners, I'm white.
It's my reaction to Edinburgh. Everyone's talking about their thing, so this is my thing.
This is your thing, yeah. Is it?
But so, like, I did grow up watching Bollywood as well, and, like, Bollywood's massive on sort of rom-coms, and, like, rom-coms in Hollywood are kind of, like, the closest thing you get to sort of Bollywood. But what's the one with Ryan Gosling and...
This is a question I've got for you. Yeah. Okay, La La Land,
yeah,
which I don't think was the film that you were going to talk about, but the previous Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling film, which
crazy,
I can't remember, Crazy Sexy Love, La La Land is obviously a musical, but is it a rom-com?
I don't know if it is. I'm not sure it is. I think it's got rom-com elements, but it's I don't think it is. Because rom-coms are, they're uncomplicated in a pleasing way, I think. And I think they can have sort of melancholy bits, but like, I don't think it is. What do you reckon?
I don't think it is either, but it's an absolutely magic film.
Yeah.
It's top five all time.
Yeah. For me. It's very, very good, yeah, but...
This is a diversion. I just want to say,
film podcast now.
I went to LA last year, and when I finished work, I had like a few hours in the evening, so I went on a bit of a La La Land tour. So I went to the, I found the place where they do their dance on the, which is fucking miles from anywhere. The, you know, the famous scene where they dance, which is the film poster. It's fucking miles from anywhere. Up this kind of, it took ages to find. But when I got there, it was totally empty apart from one Japanese tourist with his camera set up. So what he'd done is taken stills from the film and was holding them up round the front of the camera so that they were both kind of in the same position. So he was showing the real picture and the filmic picture. It was the most bizarre thing I'd ever seen. But also, I was really disappointed because I wasn't able to do that leg flick. Because he was stood there and I'd have felt a right twat if I'd have done it. So I just didn't bother. And I remember driving back down the hill thinking, should I just go back? And I thought, that guy, I think I'm really fucking weird. If I just tip back up.
Because he's not weird.
Even so. Anyway, Silver Linings Playbook, rom-com or not?
Again, no, I'd say it isn't.
I'm struggling for... there's a film with Sandra Bullock and Ryan Reynolds, and that's my favourite rom-com. Because if I'm not allowed La La Land or Silver Linings Playbook...
I'm not keen on that period in his career.
Who are we talking about?
Ryan Reynolds.
What's your favourite Ryan Reynolds career period?
I don't appreciate being put on the spot about Ryan Reynolds' career without looking at
him. You made the point that, I mean, I'm just following up like any good interviewer or any average interviewer, frankly.
I don't know, I'm not that au fait with his career, but yeah, like, there's loads of great rom-coms, like, there's even, like, the old ones with, like, Cary Grant and, what's her name?
But were they rom-coms?
Yeah, those early ones definitely were the To and Fro and sort of, like, Natty Banter, definitely.
Natty Banter. Is that a thing? Is that a genre or is that the name of a film?
I'm a 60-year-old man now, Natty.
I'm trying to find the name of the film he did with Sandra Bullock, but I can't. So anyway, this is Joe at the Edinburgh Fringe, not Joe at the Cannes Film Festival, just in case you were wondering. Proposal, there you go, The Proposal. Now that is a great rom-com.
Yeah.
It's got Sandra Bullock in.
I'll give you that. When Harry Met Sally, that's a good one.
Is it though?
Yeah, I like it, mate. I like it.
All right, I'll let you off. You can have that one. But it's not got Ryan Reynolds in.
No. And in answer to your question, Deadpool.
Okay. Google Meister. Anyway, let's get back on track. So what did you see yesterday? Give us a quick run through of what you saw, what you enjoyed, what you didn't. I saw something that you are going to see, I think today actually, so we'll leave that and we'll talk about that on tomorrow's show. Give us a quick run through of what you saw and what you liked.
First thing I went to see was Fox Dog Studios with Robot Chef, and that was really, really great. It was basically, it's two lads from Manchester that I like.
Are you from Manchester?
I am. I don't like to make a big deal of it, but yeah, I am.
Just never like to talk about it.
Yeah, you can't even tell from my sort of...
In the sunshine.
With my nasal Manc drawl. But yeah, no, like they were really good because they basically use technology and sort of humour to sort of like... And they interact with the crowd, so like everyone has to sort of connect to their sort of local sort of Wi-Fi thing, and then they're able to... control people like icons on a screen. It's like amazing. It's sort of so impressive on a technical point of view, but like it's so funny and they're great. Like if you get a chance to see them at the Fringe or anywhere else, definitely do it just because you'll really enjoy it and you're part of the show. Then I went to see, I'm really rubbish with Irish names. I think it's Gráinne Maguire.
If it's not Gráinne, we do apologise. Yeah. If your name's like Gordon or Gina.
Yeah. Well, it's Gráinne. So, like, I think it's Gráinne. She was really good. You might have seen her on, I think, the MASH report. She does. She's done like bits and pieces on Brexit, and like her show was good because she did drop in like political stuff that she's known for, but like it was just in a very light way. And I really enjoyed that. She was talking about lovely girls and the roles of Tralee in Ireland, where like lovely girls sort of compete to see who's the loveliest. Talking about how she's not a lovely girl, but no, it was really, really great. Then I went to see Brenna Reese on your recommendation, and we've already discussed that.
You said I got two things right out of this. I'm going to go for the hat trick, especially as it's opening weekend of the Premier League season. I'm going to go for the hat trick. Do you think he will be nominated for the main award?
I definitely think he's in the running.
Boom!
All I'll say is like it's hard, sort of like, because we're seeing a sliver of like all the shows.
Doesn't feel like a fucking sliver. No, Jesus Christ!
like seeing seven or eight shows a day doesn't feel like a bit of a sort of marathon. But like, no, it's I mean, it's definitely really, really impressive. But yeah, like I wouldn't be surprised at all. But yeah, so I went to see that, and then I went to see Phil Ellis, which was completely different and sort of really chaotic, but he's just a funny bloke. And part of the thing that was impressive with that is that it was massively chaotic and sort of like barely any structure, but there was so much ad lib, and it, and I think what it proved is like he was kind of able to make anything funner. And then the last thing I saw was Kate Berlant from America. She was brilliant. Like, I think the basic premise of it is that she can read minds, and she can sort of like...
I mean, she can't.
No, she can't.
Because you can't read minds.
No, because it's fake.
Because it's fucking bullshit.
Yeah. But she was amazing, like in a really great sort of American improv kind of way. She could make anything funny, and she's hard to describe because basically anything she sort of said or did was hilarious, and like even like sort of physical comedy was brilliant. And she has this sort of stage character of sort of being really pretentious and sort of I am a performer and you are the audience, and anything that goes wrong is the audience's fault, and she's sort of like an artist and everything. And it was so great just to sort of enjoy somebody who's just making you laugh loads, and you just realise that like some people are just born funny. And literally, like, you could imagine her talking about anything and it would just be hilarious.
What about hecklers? Have you had any hecklers here? Because for me, there's been a lot of interaction. There's not been a single heckle from anywhere at any point during any show I've seen.
No, there's been zero sort of nasty heckles. But I think what you do get... And, like, I'm no stranger to sort of, like, thinking I'm funny, because I think I'm funny on a regular basis.
You're not.
I know. Well, that's a realisation that I try and ignore. But what you do get, rather than getting the nasty heckles, obviously there's a lot of interaction with the crowd and like comedians sort of feed off that, but you do get the type of audience member who's got a little bit too much confidence and thinks that they can be funny back. Not even sort of like taking a piss out of the comedian, just sort of like trying to be funny and sort of be part of the show, and like that's fine to an extent, but sometimes you kind of think they're actually the sort of professional and you're just some Dave in the audience and just let them sort of be funny and you contribute what you need to, but then let them be the funny one.
I was in the Alex Edelman show last night and he makes this, and I won't say too much because I think you're going to see him today, but he makes the point that there's some rules for his show, and one of the rules is that 100% of the noise will come out of his mouth and 0% of noise will come out from the audience member's mouth. And then this woman started talking or sort of going, "Woo, that's a really great," and he was like, "Did you just miss the bit where I said 100% of the noise comes from my mouth?" Which was, I thought, was a very nice way of kind of controlling, you know, a bit of a gobshite. His show also kicked off with a baby. There was lots of applause when he walked out on stage. Alex Edelman, lots of applause, blah, 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 blah. It went very silent, and then all of a sudden he just said, wah, wah, wah. And it was a baby, a nine-month-old baby, crying his eyes out. And he was like, beautiful physical comedy, because it was just like, I have no idea what's happening here. This couple just sat there as this baby cried for about 30 seconds, to which he made the point, it was like, probably best if you take the baby. I mean, please come back when the baby stops crying. But at this point, it's actually quite distracting. It was just the most bizarre thing. And then in Darren Harriott, the very last show I saw, probably the penultimate story that he was telling. And all of a sudden, this couple in the front row, just as he was building up to his, he was probably like 10 seconds away from the punchline. This couple just got up and left. And they were in the front row. And it was the most bizarre thing. And he stopped and was like, I mean, if you're going to leave after the gag, or I'm only on for like five more minutes, just stay. And this woman, she had her husband, and she must have been about 60, and she turned around and said, "This is absolutely wonderful, but we've got to leave." And it was like, how? I mean, you just couldn't wait for like 30 seconds or whatever. And he stopped telling his joke, and he was like, "I can't really pick up off the back of that. What I was going to say was this, this, and this." But what he did so beautifully was the door shut really slowly. So he just stood there and watched and sort of had this like fascinating facial expression, which got everybody really laughing. So he saved he saved the entire bit through no fault of his own, that the whole thing got screwed. But he just was able, just by using the door and its slow shutting, it was very, very funny.
And it it's interesting because like you were talking about that baby in Brennan Rees, in his show, there was a it might have been the same baby for all I know.
Probably fucking was.
It's just a really annoying baby. I'd just like to state, I've got nothing against babies.
No, me neither. I've got two of my own, so.
I used to be one.
Very true.
Yeah, so I love babies, not inappropriately, but like, it's
pedo. Fucking hell.
But like, yeah, the baby sort of started to cry. Like, Brennan, like, was brilliant in sort of like being really patient and sort of like using it a little bit.
Who brings a baby to a comedy show?
I know, it's weird, and the thing is, okay, you've brought a baby, but, like, I think there's probably a little bit of etiquette. It's a little bit like if I was at a show and for whatever reason I started having, like, a massive coughing fit. If it carried on, I'd just leave, just because I'd be fully aware that it's probably annoying.
What is the thought process of bringing a nine-month-old baby to a comedy show? Unless you think my baby's the quietest baby in history, but here's some news, yeah. Babies aren't fucking quiet. All right? I mean, that's ridiculous.
At the very least, sort of properly cowpulled them up.
Well, yeah, exactly. Shut the fuck up.
Shut the fuck up, baby.
Has there been any point during this festival, the 3 days that we've been here so far and the 911 shows we've already seen, where you thought, I could do that? Genuine question.
Genuinely, no. We've had discussions and we've probably had, like, opposite sort of reactions to that, just because the more I see, the more I realise that it's part of the reason why, like, I could never feel comfortable sort of like doing critical reviews of people. I like the fact that we can do recommendations and share stuff we're excited about because we want people to know how amazing it is. I would struggle to say anything negative about something even if I disliked it, because A, you have got the guts to do something I'd never have the ability to do. I mean, I wouldn't have the ability, but I'd never have the guts to get up and be as vulnerable as they are on sort of stage. And also, like, I just think, like, they've paid, like, eight or 10 grand or whatever to be here, and they've sacrificed so much financially and in terms of their careers to sort of try and make this work, and to shit on that, I don't like it. And like, the whole time I've been here, my respect for comedians has just grown. Even like we were talking about the thing about how some comedians are humble enough and sort of hardworking enough to sort of hand out their own flyers. I respect them so much for doing that. For me, sort of, my ego is so fragile that it would...
Sorry, can you just repeat that?
my very fragile ego. Mate, it would hurt me, sort of, like, I'd almost feel like... I don't want to say anything that sort of demeans what they're doing, because I think it's amazing that they're doing that, but, like, it would bother me ego-wise to sort of try and get every bum on every seat of my shows, and again, the flip side of that is if I did even one show where not many people turned up, I'd probably cry and not finish the act.
I wonder, because speaking to some comedians that we have done through the few days that we've been here, and nerves, whether you're Andrew Maxwell or it's your very first show, seem to pervade. And so I spoke to Will Hall. He's got a show called Netflix and Will here at Just the Caves in the centre of the city. And we talked a little bit about what it's like to be a kind of a rookie, a newbie. It's his first time up here. And I caught him as he came off stage. His show was packed. And I started by asking him how he felt the show had gone.
It's a nice gig today. There seemed like a good crowd. They were really lively. So I had fun, yeah.
Obviously, you were sold out here, but you said at the end that you're not always sold out. How is that for it? Because we talked about this on the podcast yesterday, how difficult it must be for a comedian who steps out from behind the curtain and you see seven people or whatever. That can be, I assume, disconcerting.
Yeah, when there's less people, you sort of have to just talk more to them and acknowledge the fact. I certainly had much smaller gigs, and yeah, I just sort of talk to them a lot and see if they want to talk back, which sometimes they do, actually.
And we are in what one of your audience members described as a chapel. Very hot. Yeah. How much does that affect the audience in terms of concentration, but also you do a lot of gag. I mean, you're not Tim Vine, but you do a lot of gags in your set. How difficult is that for remembering stuff?
It's okay on stage because I think nerves are overpowering heat, but the other day I had a show and I just looked at the audience and it was just a sort of sea of people fanning themselves, and I thought, oh, I think I might have lost them at this stage, but it's not too bad. It is a bit like a dungeon, this room. So
how nervous do you get?
Better now. We're like ninth show in and I feel a lot more happy with going on stage now.
How long have you been doing comedy? How long?
Properly stand up about a year, and I used to do sketch comedy, so about 2-3 years in total.
So you're a real rookie to the...
Yeah, I'm new. Could you tell?
Not at all, actually. Is this your, what, first Fringe, second Fringe?
First Fringe as a solo act, yep.
Okay. How overall is the Fringe experience for you?
It's been a lot of fun so far. I think I'm doing a free show, which is nice because it tends to mean the crowds aren't tiny, which I think... it's quite nice for a first show. And yeah, I mean, it's there's good days, there's bad days, but I'm enjoying it so far.
How long did it take to write a show like this? Because like I said, there are a lot of gags in it.
Quite a long time. I sort of decided a year ago I was going to do a show this year, and probably about over the course of a year I wrote the show.
There's a lot of sort of self-deprecating humour, and there's a lot of yourself that goes into this. A, is it difficult on your... because essentially you're laughing at yourself and you're asking the audience to laugh at you. I mean, is that... how you feel your comedy works better?
It's weird. I feel very happy to mock myself and laugh myself, but I've had some audiences, slightly today as well, where some of the more self-deprecating jokes, I think they just want to, they feel a bit sorry for you rather than laughing, and that's obviously not the response. So I had to take a couple out where they were slightly more that kind of joke. But no, I'm more than happy to make fun of myself as long as it's getting a laugh.
And there's the, obviously stuff about your family, and you talked about the fact that you made a joke about your mum, and you talked about the fact that you couldn't say that joke on the 11th because your mum's coming. How difficult is it when you have to put familial stuff into your set for fear of not offending people? Because I assume most of it's true.
To be honest, I will do that joke when she comes. The joke in question is about her calling me ugly as a young child, and I think there's an element of truth in it, but yeah, she... I think she'd find that funny. We're quite an open family in that sense, so it won't be too much of a problem. But yeah, I do. I'm careful. I think I don't like to make an embarrassment of family on stage, but most of the things they say are quite funny, so I'm going to be using them, I'm afraid.
So that was Will Hall. Netflix and Will is his show here at Just the Caves at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. You're listening to Joe at the Edinburgh Fringe with myself, Simon Clancy, and Noz Chowdhury. Apparently, Noz is a man of colour. He doesn't like to talk about it. He's also from the North.
Yeah.
You've got a Granada Television t-shirt on as well.
How desperate can you be to let everyone know that you...
I'm from Manchester, people. Yeah. Look at me. I have a t-shirt that tells the world I am from Manchester.
Even like the other day, I was wearing the coat that I brought here because it's my coat.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But they were even saying like that's such a sort of stereotypical Manc coat as well.
It was like a Liam Gallagher circa 1996 green hood, that kind of thing.
I'm just missing the Sambas. Even like my shoes are like Clark's Wallabies. It's like proper.
You're a walking, talking stereotype.
But not in a racist way.
I, for one, am disgusted. So Will there talked about what it was like as a newcomer. We've talked about, could we do it? Could we do it? I think the whole sense of waiting for the curtain to go back would absolutely frighten the bejesus out of me. Do you think?
Yeah, definitely me. But like, a lot of people are funny in real life.
Thanks, mate.
No, I was about to say that. I find you funny, but we've sort of chatted about it, and I think there is a small part of you that kind of wonders, what if?
I think I'd like to give it a try, but I'm not sure I've got the balls to do it, frankly. And also, if you're a comedian, you're listening to this, you must just be sitting there thinking, what an arsehole. Why would you think that you can, who can walk onto an athletics track and just suddenly think, I can jump as long as that? Or who can go into an office and think, I can make a power, whatever. Do you know what I mean? So I'm not trying to...
Yeah, but I don't at all think that's your ego running away with you, or sort of looking at someone sort of on stage and thinking, I could do what they're doing. I think it's the opposite in a way. Like, anyone who's sort of the clubs around the country, who just sort of sees an open mic night and sort of thinks, oh, I'll give it a go. I just see that as, anyone who wants to do that has just got this bit of an itch that they kind of think, rather than sort of thinking, oh, I could do what they're doing on stage, it's more thinking, I could do my version of what they're doing in terms of, I've got my own things to say and I've got my own observations. And I don't think it's disrespectful to professional comedians at all to sort of think, oh, perhaps that's something that I could have a go at. I think it's, if anything, you being here, seeing a load of shows and sort of having that little wonder about yourself, I think it's a tribute to the sort of comedians you've seen, and it's almost like they've inspired you a little bit.
Do you think it would be easier to do a stand-up show here at The Fringe than it would be at a regular comedy club, pick a random town or city around the UK? I say that because the audience, as we've talked about, the audience is lefty, kind of liberal. People just walk in and there's already a sense of, there's not a kind of Russell Kane who does the Boys Don't Cry podcast here at Joe. Russell often talks about how, you go to certain cities and it's like, prove it, wanker. There doesn't seem to be that sense here at Edinburgh, that kind of prove it.
Yeah, if you put aside sort of all the sort of cost and sort of hard work that goes into putting a show and the difference between sort of doing a comedy club set to sort of doing a big show at Edinburgh, if you just look at the audiences, I go to the Comedy Store and the Frog and Bucket in Manchester, and definitely the crowds, especially at Frog and Bucket, they don't take any shit and they can be sort of brutal and a bit nasty sometimes, especially on a Friday and Saturday night when they've had a drink and everything. And I do agree sort of here, it's a more of a middle class and sort of a polite crowd. But the flip side of that is even on a bad night at sort of the Frog and Bucket or somewhere like that, there's always an atmosphere and there's always sort of some kind of noise or some kind of sort of reaction. Whereas what I found up here is, yes, they are very polite and they do appreciate comedy and they have come to sort of enjoy it. But a lot of the crowds, and again, maybe it's a middle classness, but a lot of the crowds can be very quiet for long periods.
I was just Googling while you were talking there. Time Out magazine has got its 50 best rom-coms of all time. Okay. We're going to get through the top 20. Between now and the end of the show. Just saying, dear listener, just saying. You're listening to Joe at the Edinburgh Fringe with me, Simon Clancy, and Noz Chowdhury. You can download our previous episodes, episodes 1 and 2, handily titled, from everywhere that you get your podcast. You can also get Joe's other two audio offerings, which are Unfiltered with James O'Brien and the Boys Don't Cry podcast with Russell Kane. And we are doing sort of non-review reviews and some nice features and things which you can download or look at on joe.co.uk. Let me talk to you briefly then about the stuff that I saw yesterday. I started with Lou Conran, Lou kind of friend of the show a little bit, who's done Boys Don't Cry. And I'm not going to talk about Lou, essentially because you're going to see her later on. So we're going to sort of hold back. I don't want to spoil it for you. Interestingly, Lou, when she came and did Boys Don't Cry, she had a bit of a dilemma about the close of the show, and I'm very keen to see how you felt about how she handled the close of said show. I then went to see a guy called Sean McLaughlin, who I knew nothing about. It was a free gig. It was absolutely, it was rammed, and he was absolutely outstanding. I mean, really good, tight-knit. He's quite aggressive, and his delivery is quite punchy, and it was about religion, and it was about the collision of religion and modern technology, I suppose. I very much enjoyed it. The show was called Hail Mary. I thought it was excellent. And for a free gig, it was superb. The one thing that spoiled it, there were three fucking annoying wankers sat in the corner talking the entire time. It's the only time since I've been here that I've had it. It's really, really off-putting. Anyway, that was my little kind of bitch.
I think part of that is to do, it's a Friday night, isn't it?
And it was like 4:15 on a Friday afternoon. They were really drunk, right, and they just would not shut up. And then I went back to back to back, three great shows, starting with Rose Matafeo, who, when I was walking out, one of the audience members said, oh, you know, she's on the verge of being a star. Based on what I saw, I mean, she's a star already. It was 26-year-old Kiwi. Just a phenomenal show about sort of teenage sexual angst around. The show's called Horn Dog, so you can kind of sort of see where it's going, although it's not, she's intrigued by the word horny, but not in the sense necessarily that we use the word horny. You know, she's not talking about how she's constantly feeling sexual. It's not that kind of thing. But it was more about sort of sexual experiences and kind of, and how that collides with Me Too and some of those things. I mean, she said, you know, there's a great line where she says, I'd fuck the patriarchy if you had nice arms. She throws little sort of things out there and you think, oh, that's funny. I'm not entirely sure what's that got to do with the structure. And it's really fast paced. She's kind of rattles through it. And then in the last 10 minutes, all of a sudden she starts to pull at those threads and they all sort of start to come. Oh, okay. That's clever. You've just, wow. Okay. And then it gets faster and faster and faster. And the denouement, there's a kind of a double ended finish to it, as it were, is absolutely sensational. The way she deals with the finish is brilliant. She's funny and bombastic and she's very, very self-confident in a way and yet very sort of vulnerable. She's self-deprecating. I just thought it was just a tremendous show, one of the best shows I've seen. And again, I think she's definitely a potential award winner and if our job, part of our job up here is to find talent that in 5 or 10 years' time will become the big names, I think she is a big name waiting to happen. I was hugely impressed with her. I thought she was brilliant. I then went to see Alex Edelman, who you're going to see tonight, so I won't give too much away. But again, so beautifully structured. I mean, I think it's the best structured show I've seen here in terms of Alex, who's written a piece for us, which you can read again at joe.co.uk. It's essentially about, he's a Jewish comedian and he goes to a meeting of neo-Nazis in New York. But then there's a myriad of different stories around it, which are super. But his payoff at the end, it's just brilliant. It's the best in the way that he pulls the structure together at the end. There's just absolutely phenomenal. And when he thought of it, he must have just thought, fucking brilliant. I've just absolutely nailed this. It's super. And maybe the chicken came before the egg and maybe he thought, that's my payoff and I'll build a show around it because it's so good. I won't give much away because you're looking forward to it. And then finally, Darren Herriot, who was on at sort of 9:45 last night, really good, black guy from Birmingham originally, lives in London. Not as tightly structured as perhaps as Matafeo and Edelman and as Brennan Reese as we discussed, but lots of really interesting things, lots of good observational comedy, but a decent narrative. And the narrative is the love of his father, really, and his father who, and I'm not giving anything away when I say that his father passed away, but it's just trying, I suppose, to prove to his father and his father's memory that he's worth something, I suppose. We've been really lucky, haven't we? I mean, back-to-back 2 days, we've had some terrific things that we've seen.
Definitely, I don't know if part of it is just because, like, we've been fortunate enough to sort of, like, make good choices in terms of what to see, but, like, the quality of, like, what we've been to see has been, like, so high. And again, we were talking the other day about how even just one show that's sort of not quite on it or something that sort of just isn't for you, an hour absolutely drags very quickly, like...
So we're nearing the end, as promised. There are two things we're going to do before we get to the end of this podcast. The first one is what we have been doing essentially every day, which is if we had an Edinburgh show, what would we call it? Yesterday's podcast was about halloumi, and I kind of feel like we should stay on the same theme. I don't know. It's something to do with shellfish, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, it could have something to do with who's the fella on Queer Eye? Tez. I was compared to Tez last night from Queer Eye. And
was he being racist? Is that what you're saying? Because you're a person of colour, which we haven't talked about.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those things where, like, he was probably racking his brains for, like, anyone who's Asian. Imran Khan, no, he doesn't look like him. And also, like, it has been previously sort of suggested that I am a teeny bit camp, which I don't deny, so maybe that's got something to do with it as well.
Vogue magazine says Breakfast at Tiffany's is the greatest rom-com of all time. Haven't that?
It didn't really do much for me. I'll be honest, I don't get Audrey Hepburn.
Interesting.
I don't get, like, why she's, like, a massive icon. I know she's had a tough life and she sort of escaped Nazis or her family did, but, like, was she that talented? I don't know.
That's controversial. That's controversial. My favourite film of all time is Lost in Translation, and Vogue lists it in its top 10 of all time greatest rom-coms. I wouldn't have put it in the rom-com category, but I mean, I'm not having it as a rom-com. I'm having it as the best film of all time. I'm not having it as a rom-com, but I'm just going to put that out there. Rom-com or non?
Not a traditional rom-com.
It's not, is it?
No. And I mean, it's more about emptiness and sort of transition and all that business, isn't it?
It's a beautiful film. Yeah. It's a beautiful film. Right, pick one show you're seeing today that you're looking forward to.
I would say I'm really looking forward to seeing Lou Conran, but like also I'm gonna name three because I'm excited.
I mean, I asked for one.
I know. Yeah. Larry Dean, Justin Morehouse, who I just think is amazing, and I admire him so much, and I'm really looking forward to that. And also, I was looking forward to it because everyone was sort of raving about it before Edinburgh, but everyone's been raving about it during Edinburgh as well, and that's Susie Ruffle.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to seeing Ivo Graham. So we shall see how it plays out when we discuss it tomorrow. Thank you very much indeed for listening. You have been excellent, as always. This is Joe at the Fringe with Simon Clancy and Noz Chowdhury, and we shall return tomorrow. Farewell.
See ya.